Good evening, listeners, and welcome to the Ask the Author Live teleconference hosted by Lady AJT Ministries, and thank you for being a part of today's listening audience. Our mission is to connect Christian living authors with other authors, writers, and readers by creating a networking platform that benefits all. Listeners will receive information, insight, and inspiration as our authors share their knowledge and experience concerning their published work. And as a special thank you, we conclude each call with a drawing for an autographed book. Today's special guest is out of Springfield, Missouri. Tom Bluebaugh, author of The Night of the Toxic, never knew his grandfather. Years later, he asked family members about his grandfather, and they all agreed on four facts. Mr. Bluebaugh wrote this riveting tale based on these four facts. Night of the Toxic is a very exciting adventure set in Russia and Europe during the early 1900s. The first chapter ends on a cliffhanger, and the journey is just beginning. Join the main character, Nathan Hirschfield, on his suspenseful adventure. The author does a great job of drawing you into the character right from the start. And now, to introduce to some and present to others, the author of The Night of the Toxic, author Tom Bluebaugh. Tom. Thank you for joining us, Tom.
Thank you, Angela. It's good to be here.
All right. I tell you, I am really excited about discussing this book, so let's jump right in. Can you tell us, what was the inspiration for this book?
Well, the inspiration was that I did not have a grandfather on either side. Both my parents' fathers passed away before I was born. And I was always kind of jealous of friends who had grandparents or grandfathers. And when my mother passed away in 2005, I decided that I wanted to introduce him to the rest of the family and actually get some closure.
Ah, that's interesting, interesting. So this book, you actually started because of feelings that you had about not having your grandfather there with you.
Exactly.
All right. Well, it's an interesting title that you've chosen. What is a toxic?
A toxic, for us, basically would be a mercenary soldier. They were free men in Russia and Ukraine, and they would sort of contract with the czar or the government, and would do certain acts for them in exchange for land and food and other things.
Okay. Well, I tell you, I read the very first part of your book, and the synopsis is correct. You drew me in from the very first page. I was locked in and wanting to know what was going to happen next. You have a very vivid writing style. Where did you get the specifics for this particular work? Because you share some things that really put the reader right in the middle of what's going on. Where did that come from?
You know, Angela, I'm not sure. I've been writing all of my life. I started out with poetry when I was age 14.
Okay.
Most of it has been nonfiction. And I don't know, I just felt driven to write this. And when I got partway into it, I went online and checked with some published authors about critiquing it, and I got some good feedback from them, so I found a local group, and what started out as the beginning of the book is now the middle of the book, because these ladies were mostly teachers, English teachers, in fact, and they wanted to know what happened before the point that I started at, and so it was really interesting. I learned how to write through them, I suppose.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, reading that very first section, I could actually see the fires, I could smell the smoke, I could the smoke, I could feel the fear of those that are caught up, and I don't want to give away too much, but You open the story with this exciting scene, and you give him a double-sided perspective, or you give us a double-sided perspective of Nathan. Can you introduce Nathan, who you presented to us as a child and as a man at the same time?
Well, Nathan's father had passed away when he was much younger, and he found himself in a situation of being the oldest of two brothers and was kind of the protector. He was a hunter. Mm-hmm. He grew into a man raised by the village. And mm-hmm. when they found themselves under attack, he found himself angry because his father wasn't there to protect them. And at the same time, put in a position where he had to protect his mother and brother. And so he entered into a new world in a very fast pace.
Yeah, and it was obvious just from your style of writing that he was torn about the role that he was in. He was feeling the fear and really having all of those emotions that a child would have when that type of scenario happens, but also feeling the need to be protective. And you could actually feel the warring that was going on within him as he was struggling through all the emotions of what was going on at that moment.
Well, his whole world was yanked out from under him. And he was just, it was like going into an alternative world, I guess. But that's where he found himself.
Right. Now, I want to jump ahead just a little bit. There's a gentleman in the book, and I won't disclose his name, but there's a gentleman in the book that he ends up being with. And this gentleman actually kind of gives him some directions, and he deals with a name change, and he tells him really to kind of hide his identity. Can you talk a little bit about how you chose some of the characters that you selected to tell your story and how you developed those characters?
Boy, that is not an easy thing, Angela.
I know.
I spent many, many hours at my computer putting this story together and imagining. I did an awful lot of research. The thing that really spurred me was when I found out that those four tidbits of information that I was given actually fit in with history.
Yes.
And so it was a fact that he was a Cossack soldier. I studied them quite a bit and found out what type of people they were. They were not really very nice people, by and large.
I got that.
Yeah, they, it was their tradition to kidnap young men from villages to replace their, men who were killed in battle. But this guy was different, and probably everybody's a little bit familiar with the Stockholm Syndrome, and that's where the victim of a kidnapper actually becomes a student of the kidnapper. And
right.
That's kind of what happened in the story here.
Right. It was interesting, one of the other Cossacks that were present when Nathan was first introduced to the group, he actually says that his comrade there now has his son. So he starts referring to Nathan as this Cossack's son, and he starts doing the things that you would expect a father to do, which I thought was very interesting the way you penned that. You know, he gives him clothes to wear, and he says, "You're going to take off those little boy clothes, and we're going to put some real man clothes on you." And he makes sure that he gets what he needs to eat, and he starts coaching him about how he needs to present himself and even how he needs to talk when he's around the other men if he wants to stay safe. And he gives him clues on how to protect himself even as he's becoming one of them.
that was kind of the role, I think, that when one of these soldiers kidnapped a young man, then he was responsible for him in raising him into being a soldier. And it was very serious business because they didn't play around about what they were doing. And it was not uncommon for them to take a man's life if he didn't take his responsibility seriously in this area.
Wow. Wow. So that was extremely serious.
Very.
Yeah, sounds like one of those pass-fail tests where if you fail, it's totally over. Wow. Wow. Well, you mentioned in your introduction that your grandfather immigrated to America in 1910. Can you talk to us about some of those other things that you discovered about your family that fit in with the history that you discovered as you were studying and researching?
Well, all of the things that fit in were particular to him. Now, when he came to the United States, he came through Boston. And even though I had his name and practically the date and everything that he came in, I could not find his name on any ship manifest. Same way with my grandmother. She came to Ellis Island when she was 13 by herself. And even though I have very specific information, I can't find her. I even called Ellis Island trying to track them, and I couldn't. So those facts drive the story, but he is 95% fiction. And so I just created my own grandfather. The way I imagined him living in that kind of a society and that kind of a world. It was a trip for me.
I'm sure. But you're taking this blank slate where you have literally four pieces of information, and then you just start creating based on what was going on in that time. And I, you know, I'm always fascinated with fiction writers, how they develop their characters. How do you choose their names and their personalities before you begin to shape them on the page so that we can see them as actual people? That's just fascinating to me.
Well, it's fascinating to me. In fact, I remember reading a book somewhere in the process about character development, and this lady said that whenever she was going to write, she always interviewed her characters to see how they felt about it. And I thought to myself, that's crazy, you know. that's just too far out there for me. But the fact of the matter is, when I got into it, the character, Nathan, he drove the story. And now, I was kind of a wild child when I was a teenager. And so some of the things that you see in Nathan were contrary to me at that age, but they're part of the man that I am today. And so there's a lot of me in there. And but really, he drove the story. I don't think I can explain it any better than that. It's just kind of a weird thing.
Right. I thought it was interesting, too, you take the time to tell us that Nathan sometimes can be a little bit defiant. There was a section where you wrote about him picking up his father's pistol, and he, you know, he stuck it in his pants, but he said, you know, his mom didn't know that he'd been practicing with it. She told him wait until he was older, and she felt, you know, he could handle it. But he'd been sneaking off practicing with the gun, and she had no idea. And that whole conversation happened in his head. So nobody else heard it. The reader was privy to his thoughts there, but it was just interesting that as all this stuff is going on around him, he's taking this moment where he's angry at his dad for not being there, but then he's patting himself on his back because he got around what his mom had kind of put out there is this is what we're going to do right now. He'd gotten around that, and in some form was thinking, now I may be able to protect the family like I need to because I have a skill that I wouldn't have had if I'd listened to my mom. So that defiance kind of jumped off the page, even though it's subtle the way you put it in there. That jumped out at me.
Well, he was an independent young man, well-respected within the community. He was the best hunter in the community, and he took pride in what he was doing. And all of this really prepared him for what he was going to face in his new life, because he was going to need all of it and much more to survive.
Right, right. Now, as a writer, what can you share with other writers concerning this particular project when it comes to writing about something that's personally close to you? There's a personal connection. Because this isn't like some of the other authors that, you know, they're just writing and everything is fantasy and they're pulling from somewhere else. You were pulling from a personal place and creating a story around the personal platform that you stood on to actually write this story. So what can you share with writers who are doing Christian fiction writing about pulling from their own experiences?
Well, we can only write what we know, Angela, and that's what most authors do, or in my opinion should do, is begin writing what you know. I didn't intend, I mean, it wasn't my life's goal to write a fiction book. Excuse me, I've got allergies, so my voice gets away a little bit, but I had never written fiction. Well, I can't say that. I'm going back to my early 30s when I was involved in children's church. I developed kind of a production company, and I wrote skits and created characters in puppets, had the ladies in the church make the puppets for me, and used it to teach children, and it was a lot of fun. I've always been creative like that, but when it came to writing fiction, wow, was it different, because everything is made up, you know, for the most part, and so I think being personal, I actually was meeting my grandfather in my writing. That kind of sounds kind of strange, but I was meeting him. I was getting to know him. And I think I was creating a man that I would want to be a descendant of.
Gotcha.
A man with morals, a man with intelligence, a man that was strong, a man that I won't say was without fear, but he knew how to handle his fear.
Right.
And so, I just, that's the kind of grandfather I wanted, and that's the grandfather I made.
All right. Well, it's a very, very interesting story. Like I said, from the very first page, you brought me right on in, and I was there experiencing everything that Nathan was seeing and hearing and feeling at that time. Now, you actually have some other works out there. Can you talk to us about your other releases and just let us know, what else has Tom Blueball written?
Well, I started out several years ago working in the bus ministry. I was going to Bible college, and I wrote two papers, one on drugs because they were really becoming prominent, and one on evangelism. And I was holding seminars in churches, helping them start bus ministries.
Wow.
And so I put those two term papers together for a book, and I hand-delivered it to a gentleman I knew in a denominational headquarters Now, this is back in the day before there were any computers, word processors and all that. I didn't even have a backup copy. And I gave it to him to look at, and he lost it for a year.
Wow.
Lost it for a year, and all of a sudden, one day, it comes back to me in the mail with a simple note that says, not interested.
Wow.
So that was the first time that I self-published. And so I self-published it. I sold it at seminars, not to make money, but just to get information in people's hands.
Mm-hmm.
From there, I wrote magazine articles for denominational magazines and business magazines. And then in 2009, I found out that Barber Publishing Company was looking for devotional writers for a book that they wanted to publish. And I contacted them, and they asked me to submit some samples of my writing, which they did, and they contracted me. So along with 14 other people, it was a beautiful book. When I got the book and saw what it was and held it in my hands and actually realized that I was actually published by a publisher, it brought tears to my eyes.
I bet.
And so after that, it just kind of opened up doors. And then in 2011, when I was writing Night of the Cossacks, I was helping a gentleman put together a website, and he and his wife had decided to start a independent publishing company. And I had a link on the first page of my home page that said, read the first chapter of my book. Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think about it, but he noted it, wrote it down, and went home and read that first chapter. And then he called me, and he wanted to read the manuscript, and then he offered me a contract and wanted to publish it. So
okay.
I didn't go the traditional route of what most authors go through to be published by a traditional publisher.
Okay.
But what I didn't know was going to happen is my book became a large business card.
Okay.
It opened up some unbelievable doors to working with other authors and speaking to groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I started in 1973 as a self-employed entrepreneur, and I had been in marketing all that time.
Wow.
And so it was just kind of a fit that the writing and the publishing and the marketing all came together and brought me to the point of where I am. I never foresaw it. My favorite verses are Proverbs 16:9, a man's mind plans his way, but God directs his steps. And
amen.
Proverbs 19:21, in a man's heart are many ideas, but God's purpose will prevail. And so I look at those verses now and I know what happened. So sometimes writing the book is the smallest part of the journey.
It really is. It's a lot of work, but it really is the smallest part. You're absolutely right.
And the easiest part.
Yeah. Although I know some people that don't think that's the truth, but it really is. I'm, like I said, really excited about this book. When I first started reading it, I was just caught up from the very beginning. It's Nathan is a very likable character, and you want him to be okay. That's just from the very beginning. You want him to get out of trouble. You want him to get away from the bad guys. You want him to be okay. And I'm excited about finishing it, and I'm extra excited about giving our listeners the opportunity to get a copy of this book. Can you tell our listeners where they can go to get a copy of Night of the Cossack?
Okay, they can go to my website, which is tombluebaugh.net. And that's T-O-M blubaugh.net. And there's a link on there to my bookstore, and they can order a signed copy. They can order through Amazon, whatever they want to do there. And it's along with another book that I wrote for children called The Legend of the Tickle Bugs. And the interesting thing, too, is that a lady who read my book was a teacher for 20-some years, and she asked me if she could write a lesson plan for it. And so she created a book with a 10-day lesson plan to be used for homeschoolers. And so I'm really excited about that.
That is exciting. Now tell us a little bit about that other book, the Tickle Bug, you said?
Oh, okay. Well, I had a granddaughter in Texas named Katie. Mm-hmm. And Katie and I would get down on the floor, and I would tickle her and talk to her about the tickle bugs. And just kind of a thing that we did. And then she had a little sister. And when that little sister was about 4 years old, she called me one day on the phone and wanted to know when I came back to visit if I would bring some tickle bugs.
Oh.
And so I told her I would see what I could do. And before she called, I had been outside trimming a bush in the front yard. So when I went back to that, honestly, what happened is that this whole story just unfolded in my mind, and I unplugged the tool that I was using, and I came in and sat down at the computer, and in 45 minutes, I wrote that story.
Wow.
And again, I had no idea that I was going to publish it, but I did make a copy of it for all of my grandkids and kids, and there's 6 kids, 14 grandchildren. And
wow.
It just became a legend. I'm not going to tell you anything about it because it's,
right.
It's I wouldn't want to spoil it for anybody, but it's just something that the Lord gave me, and then now it's in print. And we're off and going with that.
Right. Well, that's just awesome. I am, again, really excited. You have really, really been a great guest today. I want to thank you for joining us. All right, listeners, it is giveaway time. When I say, and the winner is, we want every listener to say their name, and this month's winner will be heard by everyone. So, if you're ready... And the winner is, and the winner is, hold on, who's the winner? Ananda. Ananda, congratulations. You've just won an autographed copy of Night of the Cosmic by author Tom Blubaugh. Just visit LadyAJCommunities.com, click the ATA winner button to claim your prize. Thank you, Ananda. All right. Well, we'd like to thank each of you for joining us today, and a very special thanks to author Tom Blubaugh, author of Night of the Cosmic, for sharing with us today. Join us on August 24th at 7:30 p.m. as we host the living Christian author Dana Williams from Gonzales, Louisiana, author of Deep Darkness, who said success was not a part of God's plan. This is Angela J. Poole with the Ask the Author Live teleconference, Lady AJP Ministries, where we're empowered to enlighten, to encourage, and to empower you through the word. Blessings.